Hello, and welcome back to The Calling. We are here right before Thanksgiving break, and we are here with Reverend Merrick Zabriskie. I'm Andrew Boyer, and we are interviewing Headmaster Adam Rohde, and maybe you could do the introduction, Merrick.
Sure, I'd be glad to. Thank you, Andrew. Great to be with you all. So Adam is in his 19th year as head of Greenwich Country Day School. You're a survivor. That's a long tour of duty to go through those same events every year and try to keep fresh. I really admire that. You have over 1,400 students in your school. It's pre-K through 12th grade. And you've served as head of school. You teach one of the sections of the 8th grade American history classes, and you coach the boys, one of the boys' basketball teams. You studied undergraduate as Wesleyan and then got your master's degree at Stanford. So you've got a lot of education under your belt and you've seen a whole lot. So we're really thrilled to have you here.
Well, thank you. Exciting to be here.
I want to open up and just say, you know, ask you, was there a moment or a story or an event where you said, this is it, this is my calling to be in education, to teach, to help form young minds?
So I think senior year in college, I had sort of two paths in front of me. One was what most of my friends were doing, which was the head down into the finance world and try to make lots of money. And the other was a deep burning desire to do something connected with children. I had been a summer camp counselor forever. I had played three sports in college. I wondered if there was a way to continue doing something in that world as well. And so I was actually pursuing interviews on two paths. It would be at Bank of Boston interview, and then I was interviewing at a school. And I interviewed at a school in New Jersey called the Pingree School. And the gentleman who interviewed me was the head of school, a man named John Hanley. And I think we spoke for about an hour and talked about nothing and talked about everything. And we talked, he was a Irishman who was Oxford educated and had that great accent. Everything he said sounded smart. So we talked about rugby and cricket, both of which I had no desire to know anything about. But at the end of that interview, I was kind of pushing back a little bit on him about coming to work at an independent school in a fairly wealthy community of somewhat highly privileged kids. And he said to me, he said, Adam, it's almost a moral obligation. The children that are going to graduate from Pingree are going to be leaders. And if you really want to have an impact in the world, find a way to impact these children so that they'll graduate with a finely tuned moral compass. And if you can make that happen, the impact on the greater world will be significant. And that spoke to me, and it's sort of resonated with me in the many years since.
You know, as I was thinking about you, because we actually met, right, when you came from Pingree to Greenwich Country Day, because I went to Greenwich Country Day and my kids went there too. And so they started right at the same time that you started. And maybe you can just enlighten me a little bit about, like, how does sort of a teacher then leap into headmaster? Because it seems to me like that's, like, is there like an officer training school or something? Like, it seems like you go from, you know, being, you know, someone who's got a bunch of balls in the air to someone who has all the balls. And what is that like? I mean, how do you prepare for that? And is there a track?
I think it's the Peter principle, right? They keep promoting you to your level of incompetence. So I'm at the fully incompetent at this point. I was teaching and coaching at the Pingree School. I was teaching and coaching both high school and middle school age kids and just loving it. And I think I could have done that forever. I think I could have. At one point, there became a need to have a dean of students. And the head of school said, you have a great connection with the kids. I think you could do this. Would you be willing to do this? And you can still coach and teach and do the things you love. And I said, sure. And so I was the dean of students. And then there was a call for, I think we had maybe a one-year leave of absence to fill the head of the middle school role. So another administrative job. I ended up doing that for a number of years. Then there was a need to fill a head of the upper school job. So I was the principal of a high school. And then as the principal of the high school, the head of school said, I'd love you to also have the title assistant head of school. And so it happened almost by osmosis on some level. But once I was at that spot, I really could have stayed in that spot forever. And it was during that time that the guy who hired me, that John Hanley, who I mentioned just a minute ago, he retired and a new head of school came in, and it was really interesting. I served for 4 years under that head of school, and I probably learned more in the 4 years serving under that head of school than I did in the 12 beforehand. And that's because I learned exactly what I would not do. It was just a disaster. And so it made it easier for when the knock on the door came that said, there's a job opening in Greenwich, would you consider it? And that's how sort of one thing led to another. And then just to answer your last question, which I just said over there, there is actually something called Heads Camp. And when you get a job as a head of school, there were 70 of us in our cohort in a country, across the country, all kinds of schools, big schools, little schools, parochial schools. You could go to this Heads Camp. And that's where I met Molly King, because we both started the same year. And it's like a week of everything from finance 101 to fundraising to school discipline to management principles. And it was worthwhile. It doesn't in all any way prepare you for what you're about to jump into, but it's somewhat helpful to get us moving in the right direction.
So Adam, what are the hardest things for a head of school to deal with? Where the buck just stops at your desk?
I would say, again, this has changed significantly over the many years. And I think it's very similar to being the same thing that's happening to college presidents. I think Harvard had three college presidents from 1900 to 1975. I think they've had seven or eight from 1975 to 2022. What's changed? Well, it's the nature of these jobs. They were called headmaster jobs. And by the way, I don't even use that term anymore. We just call it head of school, because we used to call teachers masters, and the headmaster was the head teacher. This job is no longer a head teacher job. This job is a COO job. It's a CFO job. It's massively interesting, and it's never boring. But like one day I'm talking to lawyers about planning and zoning, and then it's management issues, then it's building pedagogy and curriculum, then it's architectural meetings, then it's people management, healthcare. The layers of it have become so deep and so many of them. Which is why I mentioned in our meeting, just the talk we just gave, the average tenure for college presidents and the average tenure for heads of school have a bullet next to them dropping south. So as I mentioned, just 10 years ago, the average tenure for an NAIS head of school was 9.9 years. It's now 4.9 years, just 10 years later.
So you're in your 19th year. How do you keep fresh? Because I served a church where I was rector for 23 years. And, you know, when you're doing 23 annual stewardship drives in a row, it's like, haven't I been around this bend in the track a lot of times? How do you keep fresh?
That's a great question. And I remember one of the former heads of Greenwich Country Day said he knew it was time to leave when he was doing his, you know, 13th Halloween parade. And he was like, that was...
do you still dress up as a tiger? You do.
I dress up every Halloween parade. And I guess at some point, if that becomes something where you're feeling like it's twisting your arm to do it, then maybe it's time to go. But I still get such a huge kick out of doing that with the kids. We've changed a lot, Merrick, over these few years, especially these last 5 or 6 years. So it has felt like a fresh new challenge. You know, we went from a school that was a nursery through ninth grade school to a school that's now a nursery through 12th grade school. We went from a school that when I started had 845 kids. We opened this year with 1,445. So it's a different challenge. And so that's kept it fresh. But unquestionably, there is some repetition in our jobs, which you kind of have to do. And I think ultimately, if you lose the excitement for doing some of those, then maybe it is the time. I've just felt blessed that so far, you know, I love the people I work with. I love the school. It still warms my heart to do it. And Andrew was asking about we have a thing called the kindergarten circus where I dress up as a tiger and then the strong people knock me down. And it's literally like doing a lot of push-ups. And so I'm getting to the point where I'm like losing my breath. It's like, so I think if I can no longer do that, that's another sign it may be time to move on.
What's it like to be head of a high school as opposed to an elementary school? Is that a very different feeling?
It is. As I said, when I was at Pingree, I'd worked for a high school, so it wasn't something that I was coming in totally cold to. But there is some truth to the idea that little kids, little problems, big kids, big problems. And that's a whole new level of things that we'll have to deal with. And fortunately, we've got other great people who work at the school, you know, the head of the division, assistant head of the division, deans of students. So we have a lot of support there. But it is a different experience. The stakes feel higher for parents. The college piece adds a whole nother layer of complexity to it. It's more challenging.
So John Elliott, who was the first headmaster at the Roxbury Latin School, which claims to be the oldest school in the United States, said that his first task as headmaster was to form the moral comportment of his students. And today, maybe the schools are saying character rather than moral comportment. But how do you all go about doing that at Greenwich Country Day?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll tell you first a quick story, and then I'll give you some more specifics. But the first day that I was on campus in as the head of school in started in July, but in August of 2004, I held a barbecue, which was a tradition to have a barbecue for our ninth graders at the head of school's house. And they came over. The kids were great. We had a great time. Hamburgers, hot dogs, talked to them. And then they left. And then Monday morning, I asked that all the ninth graders go to the lock center at the time, sit down. And I walked in and I said, guys, it was so great to meet you. I just enjoyed yesterday, but I do want to say something. On the way out, not one of you said thank you to me. Not one. It was really, and I think it was just maybe the way the night ended or something, and maybe it just didn't set itself up. But I was struck. And I said, how do you think people view you all as Greenwich Country Day students? And, you know, some kids were smart enough to say, maybe they think we're entitled, maybe they. And I said, well, how do we kind of break that? And while these are rhetorical questions, they're all about comportment. They're all about character. And what struck me was this became like the story celeb in the Greenwich Country Day parent community, which was surprising me. And all the parents were like, Rhodey was amazing. I can't believe he did that. It was great. What a great story. I'm not sure that would happen today, and that worries me in terms of our parent body. Would they be supportive of having their children called into the mat to say your behavior wasn't exactly what we hoped it would be?
So how do you coach the parents to, because they've got such an influence on the children, especially over the dinner table, how would you coach them if you said, if you're listening and you're interested in shaping the character of your children, here are one, two, or three things I would say go for.
Yeah. And again, I think it's super hard. And we were just talking about this in our last meeting, but the stakes feel a lot higher than they potentially are for parents at this time. And if you're really viewing the world as there's 14 schools that my kid can go to in college, and the Greenwich Country Day School is going to give my kid a B- in English, and it's probably going to end their chances to go to those 14 schools, people lose their minds. Those are adversarial relationships from the get-go. And it's runs so counter to what we're trying to do about raising good children. So, you know, on one level, I say to parents, you've got to look at this not in a 10-minute window, not even in the next day window. You got to look at this in decades, right? If you could have enough self-understanding to take a step back and say, this moment in time is not going to end my child's world or send them spiraling in a direction which is going to forever alter them in a negative way, because I'm taking a 10-year look or I'm taking a decades look. And in some ways, the outcome of these things positively impact kids, but parents have real trouble seeing that because they're very myopic. They're looking at just this event. And so trying to get people to take perspective is one thing that we would do. And then the other thing that we would do is I'm becoming more and more convinced and more clear to prospective parents about what we want to do at Greenwich Country Day. And what we want to do at Greenwich Country Day is we know our kids are going to graduate, again, knowing how to do the Pythagorean theorem and write a 5-paragraph essay and do calculus. Don't worry about that at all. We are going to focus on character development. And if this doesn't resonate with you as a prospective parent, then that's okay. We can agree to disagree and you can take your business somewhere else. I mean, there's lots of schools that have slightly different focuses, but if you're intentional about it, I think, and you state that up front, it ends a lot of the argument.
I actually wanted to follow up on that. So what, you know, there are a lot of great schools in Greenwich, including our public schools. What is the Greenwich Country Day brand, do you think, compared to Brunswick, compared to Sacred Heart, you know?
So rather than compare them, I will tell you that when we said we're going to start a high school, I did say, if I'm going to be part of this adventure, we're not going to build a high school that looks very similar to the other high schools in town. I did want to differentiate ourselves, but I also not just to differentiate ourselves from the other high schools in town, but because I am a firm believer that education of the 21st century, it's almost the 22nd century, is looking significantly different than what it is now. And so what's our brand right now? I'd encapsulate in a very short phrase, deep and joyful learning. Joyful. And I don't know, not a lot of people are going to hang their hats on that, but I'm trying to say, junior year in high school, if we could make that joyful, where a kid loves coming to school, we should get like the MacArthur Grant or the Nobel Prize or something, right? You remember your junior year? I'm sure it was not joyful.
No, junior year. But my kid's junior year was much less joyful than mine was too. I actually didn't mind my junior year. But I think now there's so much stress and it's so overwhelming, the college process. It's just really changed. And I think it's a pretty unhappy, junior year is pretty unhappy for a lot of kids.
And then the question is, sir, how do you do it? Right. And we've started with, a really kind of a different approach, and it was something I kind of wanted to talk about in our last meeting a little bit, but giving kids much more agency in their own learning is something that we're trying to do at Country Day, which means I think kids who show a proclivity to, or an interest or an excitement around a certain topic, should have the availability to dive deeper into that than schools currently allow them to dive into it. And so we're trying to create mechanisms for that to happen. Every kid in January will stop out of their classes at the Greenwich Country Day High School. For 3 weeks, they will not take their classes. All they will do is deep dive into something that they really love. We call it intercession. Every kid has to do an internship before they graduate. It's a graduation requirement. We have diploma programs. So you can graduate from Greenwich Country Day with a Greenwich Country Day High School's diploma like everybody else, but you could also have a diploma in the classics, sustainability, engineering, world languages, and the arts. And so for a kid that says, I'm all about sustainability, it's been something that's super important to me, there's a directory and a trajectory of classes that they can take, that they will not only graduate with a Country Day diploma, but with a diploma in sustainability. And that's an interesting one to talk about when you're talking to the college person about what excites you about education or your education or your learning. Our kids can talk about that because they're talking about something that they actually love. And it's cross-disciplinary. It's project-based in nature. They're making things. They're trying to solve real-world problems. And that's fascinating in that discussion on the college front.
That's awesome. One of the issues I've noticed here since coming to Greenwich is just the anxiety levels of people, and especially, as one couple said to me, who are raising four sons, and I think doing a magnificent job of it, who are members of our parish, they said, Greenwich is a type A community, and we're trying to create a type B family. Mm. We want a buffer around our family. We don't want to have our children, our sons, signed up for every single program out there. What advice do you give to parents to kind of take that edge off, to allow their child to be less over-programmed and more relaxed, so that they can flourish?
It is so hard, and I really believe that. I think it's you're on the hamster wheel. It's really hard to get off the hamster wheel. I see parents, as you just said, they can articulate the issue and then they can't get themselves out of it. They don't have enough to say, we're not going to do hockey. I feel like our kids don't get to be bored very often. And there's some real interesting research out there around having kids being bored, providing with them an incredible skill set when later in life they're going to be bored, or how do they fill that boredom? That's hard to impress upon parents. It's okay that every other kid in the third grade is doing peewee hockey and your kid doesn't really like it. But you think it's the social thing and that's where all your friends are doing it. To say, we're not going to do it. And not only we're not going to do it, we're not going to fill it in with violin lessons. We're going to just leave it blank. And when the kid says, I'm bored, you say, great, go outside, play. We, just to add to this, we created a playground for our pre-K and nursery. And if you came and looked at it, you say, this doesn't look like a playground. You say, it looks like a junkyard. I mean, it's pretty much by design, a pile of big sticks and logs. There's rocks and there's a water element that flows through it. So you just like from a spigot down through a little creek bed, there's sand and dirt. And that's kind of it. There's no jungle gyms and climbing things and soft ground. And it's so fascinating to watch these kids go out there. It becomes imaginary play. They're making up games. They're taking different roles on. They're the one kid's going off in the corner and building a thing, and other kids are seeing what it's just, it's the imaginative play. It's the non-directed play. And this is at our youngest kids. These are 3 and 4 year olds. And if you can get them to start to figure that sort of stuff out, learning becomes easier and deeper.
Right. So those naturescapes can be so innovative versus if you go out there and there's a swing set, there's one thing you do with the swing
set.
That's
right.
But you see an old tree laying on its side with curves and stuff, it could suddenly become a dinosaur and you could become a dinosaur slayer or whatever. What Andrew alluded to screens and all, and there's nothing to be looking like that while you're in church or something. The social media thing's huge. And I've heard that a huge percentage, our new director of youth ministry said that something like 50% of teenagers across the country say they want to grow up to become a social media influencer. That is their vocation they're looking at. What advice do you have for parents and educators and students regarding the social media thing, which just is a huge issue to deal with?
Yeah, it's super hard. Molly, I thought, was really articulate to say delay, delay, delay as long as possible. I think that's continuously moving younger and younger and younger. I mean, I'd say right now sort of 5th and 6th grade is the time when I'm seeing our kids end up with phones in their hands. And you can obviously create boundaries on what kinds of applications can go on their phone. But what ends up happening is they're still going to be staring at this screen for a very long time. The next sort of knock-on issues around the phone are all the social media stuff that starts to kick in, call it middle school time. And it becomes such an indiscriminate way to be mean-spirited if you want to be mean-spirited, to be inclusive if you want to be inclusive, but to be exclusive if you want to be exclusive. And I think I mentioned it in there. When troubles hit my desk, whether they're disciplinary troubles, maybe even academic integrity questions, or questions around sort of comportment and behavior of kids, I still want to say we're north of 75% of them somehow are intertwined with a phone or with some kind of technology. And this is like an ongoing process. I can remember the day like it was yesterday when I called the 9th graders at Country Day into Lock Center and said, if you have Facebook on your phone, you've got to take it off. It's a disaster. All the boarding schools are going to be looking at it. They're going to see and they're going to not accept you. So they took it off. And then I literally remember the next year having a conversation with the next group of 9th graders saying, you all can have Facebook, probably should have Facebook. Now we got to teach you how to use it properly so that you're not going to put pictures of red Solo cups on your Facebook page. So it's like from year to year, almost minute to minute, you're changing and trying to keep up with these changing platforms, which are super hard to keep up with as a 55-year-old.
One of the things that I think about sometimes is, you know, if you're in your junior year class in high school, you might consider yourself, oh, I'm the good writer, or I'm the good actor or drummer. And one of the problems with the internet, I think, is that you're constantly now comparing yourself to the whole world. You know, you're comparing yourself to Charlie D'Amelio, who's got, you know, however many 80 million followers, right? And so I think it creates this sort of need for extreme behavior in some way.
Worse than that, you're comparing yourself to your classmates who have now posted a picture on themselves which has been edited through editing software to make them look different. Or you're comparing it with your friends who all posted that they were at the Avenue together doing something, and now you're not, and you see I'm not there. It's insidious, and none of these children are equipped in their mental ability or even their physical emotional ability to handle this, and that's why we're getting a massive rise in anxiety, depression.
Do you think that there's like a crisis of meaning, like that there's a feeling that there's less meaning with that the internet has kind of created?
Yeah, and I think all you're doing as a 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grader is trying to figure out who you are. It's all about identity, right? And at a time when you're trying to figure out who you are, you're being instructed, influenced, pushed to be something that you're currently not, and maybe that other people are, or other people are valuing, and you don't, or your parents don't value. So you start to say to yourself, I'm not that. And if I'm not that, then I'm less than. And if I'm less than, that's where I really fear for our children. And throw COVID on top of that, it was like just the worst.
Yeah. So our director of youth ministry, Josh Barden, said that the three questions kids are trying to answer is, who am I? Do I belong? What's my purpose?
Yeah.
What would you say, you know, is there a book or two or three books you say, you know, if there are parents out there listening, this is, or these are the books I'd say, get them, read them, talk about them as a couple, and you'll learn a lot from it.
Mm. You know, I mentioned in the larger talk the work of Carol Dweck, who's a psychologist out of Stanford. She talks a lot about creating a growth mindset in children. And what I fear is when kids have the opposite of that, which she calls a fixed mindset, it's going to lead you into these areas of depression and anxiety, because you're going to view everything, your schoolwork, your social work, your social settings, your friend groups, as fixed. They're not going to change. You are who you are. And if we view that, then you can't ever get better in algebra, and you can't ever become a better friend, whereas a growth mindset changes all that. And Carol Dweck's work on that, I think her book was called Mindset, really set the stage for that. And then Angela Duckworth started to follow on that with work around grit and resilience, and she's continues to tweak her approach to doing that. But all of those are sort of social psychological approaches to how you might think about talking with kids, and helping the kids without any specifics around social media or schoolwork or sports. These are just general ways to think about raising kids and creating a way to look at the world.
Well, Adam, that has been great. I have one final question, which is probably off topic, but near and dear to my heart. Is Greenwich Country Day going to have a hockey rink in the next 5 years?
I can see it now, the Boer rink, a small
it's a naming opportunity.
Nine-figure gift. We'll make that happen, so we appreciate that. Thank you. It's now live on our podcast. Yeah. You heard the verbal commitment, right?
Yeah, well, we're trying to get him to build the rink here at the church.
The church rink. Yeah. You can never have enough.
It's been a super exciting effort to launch this high school, and we feel like we're ahead of where our schedule is going to say in terms of athletics. We went out and tried to find really great coaches, but by really great coaches, and I think this speaks to what we're thinking about, I said to every one of them, I'm not interested if you win an FAA championship, although we did win our first ever this fall in boys soccer. I said, what I want is every kid to come out of that saying, wow, what a great season. Great group of kids I played with. I learned a lot about the sport. I learned how to be a good competitor. I learned about what sportsmanship was like. And if we went 1-17 and everybody comes out of that season feeling that way, no coach is getting fired. And I made that really clear with everybody who we started with.
So you're not looking to, there's a lot of schools that really look to using sports to kind of drive college applications. And that's obviously been an issue. Is that something that you guys try to not do, or?
So I'm not naive, and I also know that our kids are going to actually do really well, and I know our teams are going to do well, and I know that colleges are going to come knocking. I don't think that is sort of our primary focus and goal. That's a secondary or tertiary outcome of what we're trying to do. And it will happen. It will happen because they're great kids in town. They love what they do. They love their sports. They've been doing it from little ages. So I know that will be a knock-on outcome of this, but it's not sort of our primary focus.
So Adam, I have two last questions. Sure. And we're going to bring it to a close, but I wanted to ask you, the whole issue of diversity is really sensitive today. It's something that was probably much more intense today than it was when you started 19 years ago or when you started at the Pincrease School. How do we do that in terms of having a diverse student body and attracting and retaining diverse faculty without having one group saying, well, you know, you're welcome all this diversity and we're made to feel like we're no longer part of this? That's such a delicate job for you to handle. Any thoughts you've gleaned on that?
It's we probably need a whole nother podcast just to talk about that one. You may or may not have been aware, but in just this past August, we put out an email that invited our families of color to come for a cider and donuts event. It's a yearly event at Greenwich Country Day. It's a way to connect new families who are coming from historically underrepresented groups to connect with our diversity, equity, inclusion team, to meet faculty. Every one of our events is open to every member of our community, as they always are, but we targeted this as, please join us if you're from these various backgrounds. It got picked up in the National Review, you know, the Project Veritas people, all these people. And when it got picked up in the National Review, what happened was we started to get phone calls that were at best disgusting, vile, racist phone calls on some of our teachers of color, voicemails. We were getting, you know, our director of admissions was getting these terrible, you know, and I'm sure they were calling from, you know, Texas and Alabama, across the country. And you couldn't track them back. We saved them. We gave them to the police. And it struck me as everything that, you know, Christ Church works for, everything that we work for is almost 180 degrees the opposite. And how do you square that, right? I mean, how do you look at the world in so very different ways that these people could say we're doing sort of complete wrong when we feel we're doing complete right? And that's that makes it both, it creates a heartache, it creates a difficulty, but in the end, it just makes me clearer on what our mission is. And our mission is, our school has been, you know, from 2004 to where it is now, has consistently moved the numbers of diversity forward. But it's got to be about commitment. We'll give away over $13.5 million in financial aid next year in the to potential families, which will be a diversity of socioeconomic diversity. We'll create an incidental financial aid line so that every experience at Greenwich Country Day is available to every student. So a piano lesson or a catcher's mitt or a prom dress or a yearbook ad, we will make sure that finances are not going to play an issue in that. And then more than anything, I think you need windows and mirrors. So we need to have a diverse faculty. So students who are students of color can see that there are teachers of color here, and a mirror to reflect themselves, and for white kids to see a window into, there are different kinds of belief systems and teachers and backgrounds out there. And as I said in there, I think when you get to that, you get to deeper learning for everybody in the building. It's stickier learning. And it's preparing you for the world they're about to enter, because college is going to be diverse and the business world's going to be diverse.
Yeah, you know, my daughter and son went through Greenwich Country Day, and their friend group was just much more diverse. And it actually was something I really noticed, that they had retained and made much more diverse friends than, for example, that I did growing up in Greenwich. And I think it actually is going to be super valuable for them to have had that perspective, you know, not just in the class, but also as peers and friends. It makes a difference.
Yeah. And I think the fact that our kids are going to graduate having had this diverse experience is going to create a social education for them. We are, as I said, good with the academic education. This is a social education, and it's super important. And schools can't lose focus of that. And that's the work I think that you're doing too, Mara. I think it's the work that the church does.
Right. So I just want to close with that idea that I always say to folks, you know, if your children go to the best schools and best colleges and get a graduate degree and end up on Wall Street or running a law firm or a medical practice, would you have been successful as a parent if your child's become a narcissist, has no sense of generosity or compassion, lied and cheated to kind of navigate to success, and is just not a kind, patient, or gentle person? Would you like your son or daughter to marry someone like that? Mm. Would you like them to be your newest employee? Would you like them to be your boss? Would you like them to be the person who moved in the house next door to you? And the answer would be no. But how do we, do you see a role that the faith communities are playing here in Greenwich to add real value to families and children and youth, so that those who'd say, oh, we got them baptized, or we had the bris, and then, you know, we had the confirmation or the bar mitzvah, but you haven't seen us much since then, that they're maybe missing something significant, that you can go into all these areas of success, but if you have these spiritual gifts, you actually will have a fuller life, more appreciation of it, and make a better contribution.
100%. And you and I might have talked about this at one point. You could kind of weaponize the very thing that drives this community to help you with that. You know, I'm thinking off the, throw it against the wall. When you have like an interfaith kids council, right? You get the, you're right across the street from Temple Shalom. You got, and you make it something cool, and you, you know, you don't say it out loud, but they all know, I'm going to put this on my college resume, right? But what it really does is it creates this well-cultivated, curated kind of thing where, and it could be of lots of different ages, right? I mean, seven-year-olds could be in an interfaith council of thinking about ways in which, and it could meet once a week, and you could have your youth minister lead a group like that. You could have multiple ages. They could age up in it. There could be leadership positions. You could task them with saying, you know what, guys, you all have your phones. We need to create the new social app, the app which is going to be like, Kindness Gram. It's a closed loop, and everybody on it is going to, you can't get in it without, you know, somehow getting into the loop. But all we're going to do is create affirmations on there. We're going to celebrate each other's great stuff. We're never going to say a negative thing on our, all we're going to do is, hey, Tommy's scored a goal yesterday, and Sally was invited everybody in her grade to her birthday party, and we're given props, and it's like a celebration, and kids could put their thumbs up, like button on those things. I mean, I just think there's millions of ways that we could impact kids and even leverage some of the things that we're kind of pushing back against, but in a way that's really positive.
So we need to get a venture capitalist and Josh Barton in a room and build an app.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, thank you very much, Adam, for joining us. And thank you, Zabriskie, as well. And this has been The Calling. If you have someone else that you think who's in our community that you'd like to listen to, we are always looking for new people, new guests. And if you have some feedback for us, please write to us at thecalling@christchurchgreenwich.org. And thanks very much. We'll see you soon.